Welcome to the podcast, where we introduce you to incredible humans who share their journeys with the mission to inspire you to harness your own inner tenacity to drive your life and career forward. And now, your host, Adam Posner.
We are back with our second guest of the day here. I'm thrilled to welcome Gail Firestein. She is a Chief People Officer at Castle. And if you look the way it's spelled, it's kind of interesting because it's clothing as a service.
Yeah.
What is clothing as a service?
So Castle works as a technology and services platform end to end. We work with fashion brands, retailers to help them monetize their inventory in brand new ways, primarily through rental. So we kind of, you think about your normal e-com site, you know, someone goes online, orders, sends it out, and it goes back with us. We have to bring it back in. We have clean it, we inspect it, we keep it back into the monetization cycle for the brands.
People don't realize how expensive it is to return things, and I found it recently as a consumer, and this is like in the last year, where I'll go to process a return, and depending on the price, they'll say, keep it. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh,
I remember the first time I at Big Gale, I was like, they're hitting camera on me?
That's because they can't. This is exactly one of the problems.
They can't return it.
Right. One of the problems we're trying to solve is just this for the brands.
It's too expensive.
Too
expensive. Pay for shipping, and then the processing, and then the manpower to get it back into the inventory flow and the logistics.
So imagine now if you're a consumer and you're on, you know, the Vince site, you know, contemporary brand, and you see a garment you like, a shirt, and you say, you know what, it's even marked down, let's say 30%, but you can't return it, right? Because the retailer, they don't want it. It's too expensive. So Castle comes in now and says, you can buy it and not return it. You could borrow it.
Yeah, you could borrow it.
Borrow it. You could borrow it for 10 days. And if you like it, you could buy it.
But the algorithm also, and we're not going to get too deep into that because I don't focus on people. Because my first question was, how are people not gaming the system if they realize that Target, for example, they do this all the time. And I said to my wife, I'm like, no, there's an algorithm. If you do this more than once, you're going to have to return it. They're not going to let you keep it.
No, I think maybe not. But I think that's exactly what we're talking about with these brands and retailers, right? Is that you don't have to lose that money. And not only that, if it goes into the rental ecosystem, it'll go turn out multiple times.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's get in.
And sustainability is also a part of that equation.
What people also don't think about, too, it's a really interesting one, the logistics of the trucks and the shipping and the environmental impact on all these returns, too. And, you know, one of the downfalls, obviously, of this whole e-commerce is people just buying stuff and returning it super easy. Like, I'm going to get two sizes and I'll return the one that doesn't fit.
Exactly.
So let's get into people leadership.
Yeah.
You've been doing this for a while. How many folks are in your organization?
We have just over 400. We're it's a really great mix. We're out in India. A lot of our used to be primarily engineers. We have many of our different functions now in India. We have our warehouses in a couple of locations. And data scientists. We have really interesting new types of careers for people in retail. Well, you take merch, for example. It's not like the merch program at Macy's, right? Because we're very data-driven. We're working with the algorithms and representing clothing in a totally different way, right? Account management. You know, so people with retail background that want to be in a really tech-driven, data-driven, disrupting environment, we're the place.
How do you, as a, you know, the top people leader in the organization, is it a challenge managing global remote workforce?
We're hybrid, except for the warehouse, of course. And we, right now, we're settled in on 3 days a week. It's been a very interesting shift. I think being very global and teams really needing to cross team collaborate before even the pandemic kind of set the mindset of having certain kind of sensibilities and etiquette, right, of how to work with teams across multiple time zones, peering into each other's homes because, you know, in India it's nighttime there or it's morning in California and they haven't gone to the office yet. So I think some of those things were kind of there already just by the nature of it,
right,
and then got magnified with COVID when we all went remote. And now we're kind of back and shifting taking now, evolving that and saying, you know, we're going to actually, each one of us is going to work differently, right? There's certain things we're going to do in the office together and certain things we're just going to do at home.
What are some of those collaborate, like, because one of the biggest, you know, knocks on the remote work is that collaboration has decreased. And at first there was some great tools out there. That really it. Then people got fatigued with those. I mean, my personal take, I came to the world before I got into it. You're a recruiter by trade, podcast in my heart. But before that, I worked in account management at agencies. And for me, there was something special about that vibe in the office, that collaboration, people working together. So when, you know, was it 2020? It's been 4 years already. When everyone just had to go, you know, remote, it was hard for a lot of companies. And some companies, as you mentioned, kind of had some of those cultural elements where it made it a little bit easier.
Right.
What have you found to kind of be that nice mix of collaboration? Where, like, in person, remote, how do you breed that culture in? Or how do you trickle it down?
For role modeling, number one, always, right?
So lead by example.
So just a really, really simple example that I did right away is that my team is very distributed. I have people in India, people in Ohio, California, etc. And I try to do all my touch bases with my directs that are in my location in person. And I shifted my schedule around to say, okay, well, I'm going to...
So you could see them. You could have
right. And so, look, I'm going to do my interaction with my team in California remotely anyway. Let me do that on Mondays and Fridays when I'm at home. And I'm not giving up that moment and those opportunities to be in the office and interact with my team that it happens to be in the New York office.
Was it a tough decision with leadership? Let me put it another way. Was there pushback from... the employees about slowly come back?
Yeah.
Like, did you have people that were just like, I don't want to?
We had people that left.
And
that was okay.
Hard.
Yeah, that was okay. You know,
it's their choice.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of started with, we're opening the office up optional. Health and safety, especially in the early days of coming out of the pandemic, we saw first and foremost, 2 days a week, 3 days a week. We were always a company that prides ourselves on flexibility and having empathetic leaders and support. And so if they needed to stay home before the pandemic to do something, they did. But what happened, I think, it became such a thing in the zeitgeist.
Right.
That it almost
like it was almost required by companies to be 100% remote.
And yeah. And
it's not always the case.
We came back and I'm finding people are asking for rules now on when they could work from home for personal flexibility, which we didn't have needed before the pandemic. So it kind of put almost a negative spotlight on it.
It's like, when can I?
Yeah, but like, if you need to, that's talk to your manager, talk to your team, you know, what's going on that day that you really should be, or if you just have an emergency to deal with, you have agency to do it.
Treat people like adults. Let them decide. And I mean, then there's obviously like unique one-off situations. You might have a fantastic employee that moved during the pandemic, like really far away.
Yeah.
And they want to stay. And then it's a tough balancing act because like, how do you make an exception for one person? Yeah. And not?
It's a slippery slope. And we look at each one individually. We don't have that many that are working 100% remote.
So let's shift gears. How many recruiters do you have on the team?
How many recruiters?
400-person company.
Yeah.
Like in the trenches, day-to-day recruiters,
four, five. I got two in India and three in the U.S.
And what has been across the board, a couple of the biggest challenges from a recruiting perspective?
First of all, I think the shift, not this year so much, like 2022, 23, as we were starting to come back in the office and COVID still had its tail. From a health and safety perspective, you know, just getting back on the brand, right, and getting back, you know, being consistent with our candidates as they were coming through the pipeline on what our expectations were. What we've done a lot in the last 18 months is try to increase Castle's profile on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Because Castle is a B2B company. We don't do a lot of brand marketing.
There's an easy way to do it. Sponsoring this podcast.
Yeah, exactly, right?
So we're going to get into that, right? Yep. Let's get into branding for a little bit. And I want to talk about the two sides of that. Candidate attraction.
Right.
Is it always necessary to have a strong presence on LinkedIn or other platforms?
I think it depends, right? It depends how you recruit. I think for some of our roles,
Brand recognition helps.
Yeah, I think for some of our roles, though, they're unique. They don't really exist. I was telling you, like, you know, to have a merch person or an account management who understands data and algorithms enough to work with their, you know, accounts, it's different. So I think, you know, it really helps, obviously, employee referrals. But I think what we've done is we've done employee spotlights up on our LinkedIn page. And
that's a nice way to do
and
it.
I think it's really helped not only feeling good and proud of working at Castle, but I think it helps candidates see people like them at the company.
Very relatable. And they don't want to see, like, the... I'm not trying to insult you. They don't want to see the talking heads, the leadership up there.
Of course
like,
not.
Here's why Castle's a great place to work. No. They want to see people
exactly
actually, you know, are,
do
are doing the job. And that's about the candidate attraction and candidate experience. What are some of your best practices that you've implemented as far as candidate attraction to the candidate interview experience and timely? Because I found that I work with a lot of clients, they get so far.
I feel like
they fail at onboarding.
Oh my goodness!
You're not setting them up for success.
Yes.
I had one client years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It took them a full week. They forgot to order the laptop, and the person just like, "Well, what do you want me to do? I can use my personal computer." Like, no, for security reasons, what the job was, we can't let you. And you're like, "What the heck? What do you want me to do for the next week?"
When my team watches this, they're going to think we actually planned this conversation and this question. Because onboarding,
we didn't. Promise we didn't.
Because onboarding,
I'm not that slick.
Yeah, actually, onboarding. I'm very proud of onboarding. This is something that we talked about when we were remote during COVID, and we said, you know what, we need to really evaluate the onboarding process because we were onboarding people remotely, and so we needed to do something differently. Logistics were challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to get, now you had all of a sudden to ship someone's laptop home or even offboarding someone had to bring the laptop, ship it back.
Please send this a computer back.
Right, please. So we actually worked really, really closely with our colleagues in IT. We looked at our processes and just looked in the mirror and says, you know, what are the standard operating procedures we need to change? And then we had to, you know, rechange them again when we started coming back in the office.
It's about syncing the team up and having, we have a candidate, just made an offer, signal IT, have everyone lined up so they're not waiting and being in communication.
Yeah, and I would say anecdotally, when we talk to our new hires, because we do a survey at 30 days and 90 days. And the 30-day survey, a lot of it's focused on the candidate had their experience through the recruiting process, through that day one, day zero, day one. The 90-day survey is starting to focus more on, are you getting what you need from your manager?
Are you being set up for success?
Correct.
Which is the most important thing.
The business partners spend a lot of time coaching managers. We've done, you know, onboarding, training, of course. But it's really, you know, making sure that their goals are aligned with the expectations of the job that they came to join.
We could talk for hours about this. Yeah. I really love talking about the candidate experience. I love talking about employer branding. But we're on a tight podcast schedule today. So what is a people leader keeps you up at night these days?
Keeps it.
Or at least put it another way. What's a current challenge that you need to kind of solve?
Yeah, I think that...
Good.
One of our values is do the right thing by people. And we're fortunate to have a CEO, a female CEO, started and founder of the company. We have very proud of our number of women and our diversity. And I think that gives us challenges of, it's a very broad demographic that we serve from an employee experience and engagement perspective. So how do we're not going to satisfy everyone and one size doesn't fit all. So how do we come up, right? How do we come up with what I would say the buffet of things that...
In Vegas, so the buffet analogy is.
It's a good one, right? That satisfies enough and has impact on people's work life, professional, and personal lives at the same time.
I love it. Well, Gail, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. Where can folks connect? Where can they learn more?
Thank you so much. It's been fun. Thanks.
Where could they connect with you? Where do you like to be engaged with on
social? I'm on LinkedIn, mostly.
Find Gail on social. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Over the last 3 years, how much market volatility have you experienced in your business? How many times have you had to hire quickly only to find yourself in a position a few months later with not enough roles to keep your recruitment team busy? Now, what if you could work with a flexible recruitment partner that you could scale up and down based on your needs without compromising on quality or culture? The good news is that solution is finally here. Matcher is a tech-enabled RPO player that made its mark in Europe and has now taken over the US by storm. Matcher combines technology, experience, and flexibility for startups, scale-ups, and corporates to quickly deliver on their hiring needs. Now, whether you're hiring across engineering, go-to-market, or G&A, Matcher got you covered. That's why Matcher's embedded sourcing, coordination, and recruiting services are trusted by companies like TikTok, Booking.com, Miro, Grammarly, Stripe, and more. To find out how Matcher can be your flexible recruitment partner, visit matcher.io. That's matcher.io. And make sure you tell them you heard about it on the podcast. Thanks.
Wisdom is forever, but for us, it's time to go. Thank you for joining us. Luckily, we'll be back with our next episode soon, jam-packed with more incredible humans. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and sharing. To join the conversation, search The Pozcast on LinkedIn. And to catch up on past episodes and more info, please visit www.thepozcast.com.